Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Max Burns, the founder of Third Degree Strategies, is going to be here to tell us why Democrats cannot get complacent and assume that Donald Trump's legal problems are going to catapult them to victory this coming November. We'll also talk about Matt Gaetz possibly getting away with it, as a new report from the Washington Post suggests that career prosecutors do not want to bring criminal charges against him. We also have some updates regarding Hurricane Ian and the situation down here in Florida, along with the clearest indication yet that Donald Trump is, in fact, running for president already. We have all that and more coming up. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week. Go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So obviously the first thing I want to talk about this week is Hurricane Ian that slammed into Florida on Wednesday, all throughout Wednesday. It is now making its way, north, causing more devastation and destruction. But down here in Florida, the recovery efforts are barely even underway at this point. And already local officials and authorities are telling us they suspect that hundreds of people are dead from this storm. We haven't seen a hurricane like this slam into Florida probably since Michael, which happened in the very early 90s. Not Michael. Michael hit the Panama City area just a couple years ago. It was Hurricane Andrew that I was thinking of. My apologies there. But the devastation that this storm brought on after rapidly intensifying in the Gulf of Mexico, of course, climate change, number one factor with that. But this isn't a story about climate change. This isn't a story about the failures of the Florida government. This is a story about people needing help. And that's all I want to focus on right now. If you go to our YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Click on that community tab. I put a post up there on Thursday. It's a link to a Miami Herald article. There is no paywall. And in that article, they've posted links to various different organizations that you can go to help the victims down here in Florida. That's what we need to focus on right now. The victims. People lost. To say they lost everything is an understatement. I don't know how many people listening to this program right now have ever been through a catastrophic hurricane. I have, certainly not to the degree that South Florida is witnessing right now, but I've been through some that, we were without electricity for almost a month. Homes destroyed. And every morning after that, you wake up and you don't even know what to do. You're kind of in a daze for weeks, possibly longer for some folks. It's a state of shock that if you haven't been through an experience like that, you truly cannot understand it. And I know because I've been through it. You don't know what to do with yourself. People lost their jobs now because of this. They lost their businesses. Unless you're one of the people that lives down there that happens to work for a big, multinational corporation, your paychecks are gone. The place where you go to work is not there anymore. These people have no idea what the rest of their lives are going to be like. So again, on the community page on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ringoffire, there's a link to that Miami Herald article. Help out in any way if you are able to do it. And one thing, by the way, I want to point out that is not in that link, and this is something a lot of people always forget about, pet food. Pet food is something that is desperately going to be needed. We're going to have lots of animals down at shelters. So keep that in mind too. Obviously, the people are the priority, but don't forget all the pets as well. the people who are unable to feed their pets. So that is definitely something to do. Blankets, even something as simple as teddy bears for children. Believe it or not, that can make a world of difference for some of these young kids who have watched their lives just literally wash away in an instant. So again, please, if you don't want to go to the community page on our YouTube channel, I do encourage you just, you know, Google, you know, how to help Hurricane Ian victims. You're going to see tons of links. Make sure you vet before you do anything. You know, don't just go to a random, hey, we're helping people. Make sure it's a legitimate, real thing, preferably something that is, you know, well-known and well-established. But please help. These people desperately need it. Now, in the coming weeks, obviously, we will talk more about how that hurricane was able to rapidly turn into this life-devastating event, you know, climate change and all of that, and the failures of the government down here in Florida. We will get to that. I'm not there yet. I'm in shock for these people, and I want to focus right now on getting them help. So moving on, though, we do have some big news. Matt Gaetz, in case you missed the report from this past weekend from the Washington Post, career prosecutors told the Post that they're not so sure they want to bring criminal charges against Matt Gaetz. And in fact, they're recommending that they not bring charges against Matt Gaetz because, as these career prosecutors say, they think they're going to have a hard time convincing a jury that the key witnesses, the Gaetz ex-girlfriend and, of course, the indicted former Seminole County tax collector Joel Greenberg, they're not going to be able to convince a jury, they think, that these people are reliable. This whole thing is highly suspicious to me. Not the report. I do believe that that is what career prosecutors at the DOJ are recommending. But their claims that the jury is not going to believe Joel Greenberg or any of the evidence he has provided over the last year and a half, bullcrap. Absolute 100% bullcrap. Now, they may think it, right? I'm not doubting that this is what they said and what they truly believe. But what is really at the heart of this is that the DOJ is packed with cowards. Think about it this way, folks. Those prosecutors and investigators that have been working on this Matt Gaetz case, again, for almost two straight years now, they went out of their way to get Joel Greenberg to cooperate, dropped 27 of the 33 charges against him because his cooperation was so good, because what he was giving them was so valuable. They postponed his prison sentencing four times because those prosecutors went to court and told the judge, this man is giving us everything. It is so valuable, the evidence that he has put forward. You cannot send him to jail yet because we need him. And then the prosecutors at the DOJ are trying to tell us somehow that we can't trust Joel Greenberg when every other prosecutor, every investigator has said this man is giving us gold. We're now supposed to believe the DOJ thinks they can't convince a jury it's real. It doesn't matter what Joel Greenberg says, okay? You know, oh, we can't believe it because he's saying it. Wonderful. Don't believe what he says. Look at the evidence he provided. He gave you text messages. He gave you emails. You have the frickin' Venmo receipts from Matt Gaetz paying strange women for very weird things. You mean to tell me you can't convince a jury that this man did what you're accusing him of doing or what he's being investigated for doing? Bull. And yeah, I am furious about this. Everyone should be furious about this. Not because Gaetz might get away with it, but because there won't even be a day in court, most likely. It's not for these prosecutors to decide who is guilty and who is just not worth pursuing. That's for a jury to decide. We are being robbed of justice. And let me put it to you this way. Matt Gaetz is being robbed of justice. Now, I'm sure he will tell everybody if the charges do not come, which, by the way, nothing's official. They may still bring charges against him. They're just recommending to the higher-ups that they do not. But Gaetz, if no charges are brought, is going to claim he's been vindicated, which is not true. But you know what would actually make that claim? If he took it to trial and a jury found him not guilty. And if they found him not guilty, then guess what? That is the end of it. You know, we'll always have our doubt, but at least at that point, justice will have run its course. But we don't even get to run the course if they do not bring charges against him. We don't ever get to know. We don't ever get to see what evidence may have existed against him. Maybe it was all overblown. Maybe it was all fake. If that's the case, I think we, the public, have a right to know that. Then I can hate Matt Gaetz for his horrible policies and not just for being a horrible human. We are owed this. It is a federal investigation. Our tax dollars have paid for it. I want to see how the damn thing ends. And I will be furious if it ends, because the career prosecutors at the DOJ are the biggest group of cowards that this country has ever seen. That is not the conclusion that we wanted. Put it in front of a jury and let them decide if Joel Greenberg's testimony passes the muster. We're in a situation right now, folks, where we're looking at Donald Trump. We're seeing all these legal problems that he's facing. And a lot of people seem to be thinking, yes, this might finally be it. This is going to take him down. It's going to take down the MAGA movement. But we've all thought that plenty of times before. I know at least myself, I am guilty of this. So we have to avoid falling into those traps thinking Donald Trump is somehow, and his movement, more importantly, going to magically disappear. Joining me now to talk about this is Max Burns. He's the founder of Third Degree Strategies. So Max, wonderful to have you here at Ring of Fire. You've got a great opinion piece that just came out in The Hill. And, it hit close to home, because as you start this piece, you kind of mentioned a lot of things that, as I said, I myself am guilty of. But we kind of do need to temper our expectations right now with what is going on. Even though it all looks like, oh, man, this could be something huge, we kind of got to stay focused on what really matters, right?
Yeah. And thanks so much for having me. I think that hits the nail on the head. It's sort of become a running joke in American punditry that this time it's surely over for Trump. He's not coming back from this. And time and again, he's shown that the true believers in the MAGA base are not influenced by the media. They're not influenced by the justice system. If anything, they are more mobilized the greater threat Donald Trump faces. And they feel that they are stand-ins for him. So it binds them even closer to him. And thinking that just because he's now facing mounting trouble here in New York, that he's facing federal cases about these classified documents, that he is less dangerous, is a major miscalculation.
And one of the things that's interesting too here is that when we take all of this together, you know, whether it's the New York investigation, Georgia, the multiple ones happening in D.C., it is easy for us to think like, obviously one of these is going to take him down. But let's assume for a second, even if it did, okay, we end up with Donald Trump in jail, you know, wild scenario there. That doesn't change anything. All that means is that this one guy is not out there, but this movement has grown into something that's much bigger than he himself is.
Yes, and has grown even, I would argue, outside of Donald Trump's ability to control personally. I mean, there are now several competing heirs for the MAGA movement, Josh Hawley, Ron DeSantis. And even if Donald Trump is behind bars, that will explode the MAGA movement to fix this injustice that they perceive has happened to him. History is littered with authoritarian leaders who were put in jail, who were released, and then staged huge political comebacks. This is not something that Donald Trump invented. It's something that he is exploiting in attempting to delegitimize the courts and the justice system. And Democrats are simply not taking that threat seriously enough.
And what we're kind of seeing happen at the moment here is that, you know, the polls with regard to the midterms looking much better, obviously, for the Democrats than they had, you know, 6 months ago. 6 months ago, we were probably looking at a massive red wave in the House of Representatives. I think the latest, you know, composite data shows Republicans may end up with a net gain of a five-seat advantage in the House, which still not good, but definitely better than 70 or 80 seats like they had been predicting 6 months ago. And some of that does have to do with Donald Trump coming back out there. He was relatively quiet towards the beginning of the summer and the end of the spring. He wasn't the central focus. The January 6th hearings put him back at the forefront. And then as soon as those concluded, we get this massive, you know, document scandal. So he is back in the forefront and it's helping the Democrats. But the question is, and you answer this in your article here, is it actually helping, or could this be more of a mirage?
Yeah, and that is the risk. I mean, The Economist has done great research on this and has argued that if polls are as off in 2022 as they are in 2020, many of these races are much closer than we think. And you're absolutely right. I mean, Democrats have improved significantly over the summer, helped by Donald Trump's crazy Senate candidates like Dr. Oz, helped by the Supreme Court making clear its war on abortion rights. But there is still an opportunity for these polls to be skewed incorrectly. And as The Economist notes, Republicans who support Donald Trump are more likely than any other group to lie to pollsters. So I'm not saying the polls are wrong. I'm saying we need to view this as a guidepost and not as sacred text. This can change. And if Democrats don't continue to mobilize voters, trusting just in polls is something we've been burned on so many times before.
You know, it really is, because if you think back to 2012, which was when Nate Silver, you know, just nailed everything on the head, and he emerged as, you know, this great grand pollster. Nate Silver got everything right pretty much in 2012. So 2016 rolls around. Everybody's got this renewed faith in polling. And then holy wow, was everything way off to a degree. Obviously, Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote, but not the Electoral College vote. 2020, we saw similar things happening. So polling has really gotten all over the place, and it is a much less reliable system than it used to be. You know, you've got people that won't answer calls on their cell phone when they don't know, so they mostly rely on the landlines. You've got the Trump supporters, as you say, who are more likely than others to lie to the pollsters. So there's a lot of skewed data happening with those polls. And another thing I want to point out about polls unreliability, and this could end up helping the Democrats, is the fact that the polling data, right, the number of people they contact from which political party, is based on the 2020 census data. Well, the population of the United States has suffered more than 1 million people dying of COVID since the 2020 census data. So that data that they're basing these poll numbers off of could also be outdated in a way that could benefit the Democrats. Not necessarily a huge degree, but that is something else we have to take with a grain of salt, because they're not compensating for the 1 million people that have been lost.
Yeah. And another major issue is that for a lot of Donald Trump's success in 2016 wasn't so much because people were lying to pollsters. It's because Donald Trump brought out a lot of people who had never voted before and thus had never been polled before. And he has that ability to bring out these voters who don't consider themselves what we would call political and are voting based on this individual who they've established a connection with. And if that continues into 2022 and 2024, we'll see polls that will continue to understate this sort of insurgent effect. And we need to be really cautious about acknowledging that.
One thing you also bring up is a recent poll that showed Ron DeSantis here in the state of Florida beating Trump in a Florida poll by about 8 points. And it's important to note about that poll that the margin of error was over 7 points. So the margin of error basically shows that it's a statistical tie, which, by the way, I think that's the worst margin of error I've ever seen on any poll. That is just absolutely ridiculous. But then you look at the national polls, because a lot of people do assume, obviously, Ron DeSantis, he is in second place, but it's still not even close. I mean, Trump has dozens of more points than Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is hovering in the teens. Donald Trump is over 50%. That's not a close race. Even though DeSantis is second, it's going to take either Trump not running, which isn't going to happen, or Trump being behind bars for DeSantis to even have a shot to to take this over. And I think some Democrats are kind of warming up to the idea that DeSantis might be beatable. But if Trump runs again, I don't know. I don't see it. The polls between him and Biden have bounced back and forth, you know, every month. They kind of seem to switch at this point. So Trump is still the real guy, and he's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And this Florida poll, the more you look at it, the less impressive it looks, because what you essentially have is a dead heat between Ron DeSantis, who's been governor for years, has been a daily presence in Florida political life, and Donald Trump, who moved there a couple years ago. And only in Florida are they competitive. So this idea that maybe Donald Trump could lose the Florida primary isn't going to matter much if he picks up the other 49 states. And like you said, I mean, he's leading Ron DeSantis nationally 51-19. If that was any other race, we would say that was over. And it is a sense of wish casting, of hoping for some alternative to Trump. But even in DeSantis, I mean, I'm not sure America is going to like the alternative they get in him.
Yeah, he, you know, as somebody who, obviously, I live here in Florida, I've dealt with this guy since day one. He's a terrifying figure because he's more competent than Donald Trump, but just as evil. So you've got a guy that wants to do the same thing Trump did, except he's more capable of pulling it off. And I think we could say the same thing about somebody like Greg Abbott over in Texas. I mean, Abbott has a cabinet, including Ken Paxton. The guy's been under indictment for 7 years and is still probably about to be reelected. So we've got folks over on this other side that are just stupendously evil. And their voters keep saying, yes, we want more of this. We like how horrible you are. So it's so freakish when you look at all of these different areas and you see that, yeah, DeSantis is horrible, but they love him. Abbott, terrible, but they love him. I mean, I don't know how you snap people out of that mindset or if it's even possible. I don't think it is, really.
Yeah, I mean, the MAGA movement has turned the logic on its head. We used to say vote for the lesser of two evils. Now we have Ron DeSantis actively saying, I'm the smarter of two evils. I can get Trump's policies done without creating the distractions that Donald Trump did. I can do this without being as sloppy. My evil ideas will hold up in the courts. And that's what's really appealing to these voters. And if Donald Trump has a weak point, it is that people like Josh Hawley and Ron DeSantis have proven more effective at implementing some of the worst of Trumpism than Trump himself. And that is something that really appeals to these far right voters.
And a lot of the underlying issue, which is, you know, really what your piece in The Hill is about, is that Democrats cannot get complacent. You know, even if the polls are starting to shift in their favor and it looks like, hey, maybe we pick up some seats in the Senate, the race in Georgia, Raphael Warnock versus Herschel Walker, Walker's winning in many of the polls. That's like, it's still mind blowing to me that that's even a thing that's possible, but it is very possible. Beto O'Rourke, who is very popular, losing pretty big to Greg Abbott. Stacey Abrams, the latest polling data this week shows she's losing to Brian Kemp by 7 points. We're talking about very popular figures versus unpopular figures nationally, but in their own states, these are real races. And I know with Abrams and O'Rourke, those are not seats the Democrats currently hold, but Warnock, that's terrifying. And Warnock has not been running a very strong campaign, in my opinion. He's not out there. Herschel Walker's on TV 3 or 4 times a day. I mean, yep. That guy, you cannot go anywhere without seeing Herschel Walker. And Fox News is, of course, basically running his campaign at this point, just like for Dr. Oz, trying to rehab these people. But with Warnock, where is he? Why are you not out there? I think you're trying to wait for Walker to bury himself. But you got to do some work on this, too. And that's the trap, right? That's what the Democrats are falling into. Let's let them bury themselves because they're so ridiculous. But eventually you got to get out there and you got to get people enthusiastic about you.
That is honestly one of my biggest complaints about some of these races. Like, we take Herschel Walker. The mainstream Democratic view seems to be, who cares if he's on TV a lot? What he's saying makes no sense. He can barely string a sentence together. Yeah. as if Donald Trump was some philosopher when he was on television. But the fact is, if people see him every day, it creates an expectation. And if it seems like Democrats are treating this as a victory lap, voters don't reward that. They want to see candidates fight for their seat and fight for what they believe in. And in this case, you're working with MAGA voters who have already discounted what the media is going to say. They just want to cheer for their guy. So you have to be out there twice as aggressively, not just on TV, but in communities doing retail political work. I mean, that's what Warnock did that gave us this great upset in Georgia the first time. It's what we need to do again.
And we have to do this everywhere. You know, I saw recently you have Kari Lake in Arizona. She wants to debate, but Katie Hobbs, you know, the Democratic nominee for governor over there in Arizona, says, I'm not going to debate you. You're going to lie. You're going to spread conspiracy theories. It's a waste of my time. So Lake says, well, I'm still going to show up and I'm going to be there on TV. And I think that is a huge misstep. Yes, if you would debate a Republican, they're going to lie to you. You know, that's a given. We see that. But you can't just say, well, I'll let her go and make a fool of herself. No, be there to expose that. You know, yes, it's going to be frustrating to a degree, but you have to show up and do the work and show people that not only is she a bad candidate who believes ridiculous things, but I'm better because XYZ. You got to have that second part too. Otherwise, voters will say, well, I know she stands for weird things, but I don't know what you stand for at all.
That's exactly right. I mean, politics is a contact sport, not just in debating your opponent, but making contacts with voters. And Republicans, for all of their QAnon crazy making, innately understand the power of media and that your message doesn't have to make sense if it's the only message on the air. That people will tend to think that if you're on TV, there's a reason that somebody has vetted what you're saying and wouldn't just let a crazy person on television. And while we know that isn't true, that is not the common view for most Americans. So it's important to have Democrats up there fighting, not just fighting Republicans, but fighting for our victories and for legislation that we've passed that has made life better for Americans. We shouldn't be running from that. We should be embracing it.
We absolutely should. And I think part of what's happening right now is that we have this Democratic Party that, you know, the first year of Biden's administration was kind of a beatdown. It really was. You know, you're fighting against Manchin every day. When you're not fighting him, you got to fight Sinema. And yes, that did spill over into this year. But Manchin has been, I don't want to say sidelined because he's still very much a thorn in our side, but he's been defeated. We've gotten him to agree to some things and pass some good legislation. And when those Democrats fight, when we've seen this, you know, the so-called dark Brandon come out, well, look at that. Suddenly your approval rating just jumped up 10% because you're finally hitting back against these people. And that's what the American public wants to see. They want to know that you're not just the other party. They want to know that you're getting mad, that you understand the threat from the other side and that you're doing something to defeat it. That you have to have each one of those pieces, because for the longest time we just had, oh, okay, well, they're the lesser of two evils. But now that they're passing things, they're helping people, which is tremendous. And Biden's coming out fighting back against this MAGA fascism. The public wants that. Run on that. Do that. Not just Biden, but every Democratic candidate out there today. That's your winning strategy. And we do see that reflected in the polls.
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought you pass popular legislation and you fight for it in the states and people will reward you? You do things to help people and you're not afraid to engage in that wrestling match on television. People will reward Joe Biden. They've rewarded Democrats. What we need to do is make sure that the DNC, which has raised records amount of money, is actually moving some of that money to state parties that are still suffering financially, many of them in very tough financial straits, so that we can get that message locally into mailboxes and onto screens at the local level where these people are making these voting decisions, because we cannot do it all from Washington. This has got to be a national effort.
You know, I will say, too, on that note, you know, I'm down here in Florida. I see commercials for Ron DeSantis all the time. Charlie Crist is his Democratic opponent. I have not seen a single one. Not one. Not one. Now, that's not to say that they don't exist. Maybe they're running in a different part. I'm in a very red part of Florida that will not vote for Crist. But I'm not seeing it, and I'm here, and this is a race that, you know, I can't say for certain it's winnable. Polls seem to suggest it could be winnable, but not if Crist is not out there fighting. And you know, I know Crist's history. I'm not enthusiastic about him, but he'll get my vote in November without a doubt because I see what's on the other side. But there's a lot of people in Florida that may not feel that way, too. They may say, well, yeah, you know, Ron DeSantis does some things I don't like, but he seems like a fighter. Where is Charlie Crist? And again, that's just one of many examples out there. So we know the winning strategy, and it's almost just infuriating every day that they're not out there implementing this strategy when we can clearly see it and we know they know it. They're just not doing it.
Yeah. I mean, there is a real hesitancy, I think, on Democratic consultant side to sort of legitimize what they consider to be this pro wrestling view of politics. But let's acknowledge where we are. I mean, this is what moves people. Engaging with the popular media of the day, going on TV and selling your achievements is not demeaning to the office. That's connecting with voters where they are. That used to be a very straightforward Democratic strength. But we've almost started to feel as if that's below us and below how we want to communicate victory. But I've got bad news for the DNC. If voters aren't seeing that we're winning, they're only going to see Republican mailers, Republican ads, Republican web nonsense from Charlie Kirk that the Democrats are doing nothing and bringing socialism to America. You have got to push back on these achievements. We should have learned from the Obama administration that it is never self-evident to voters what you have achieved until you go out and you tell them.
You know, you just brought up Charlie Kirk, and that reminds me of a point I definitely wanted to make, and it builds on this. You know, you're talking about being where the people are. That's why we see Marjorie Taylor Greene has a podcast. Matt Gaetz has a podcast. He's on Twitch. They're on Rumble. Ted Cruz with his podcast with Michael Knowles. They're reaching people. And Charlie Kirk has figured out, thanks to, you know, obviously massive financial backing, but he's figured out, I can take this show on the road, literally, hold these massive conferences where I have these Republican people walk out like rock stars, you know, pyrotechnics all over the stage, and they draw massive crowds. But it's not just about the showing of it. It's about those Republican people, both the pundits and the politicians, are right there in front of people. I mean, within arm's reach of huge crowds of people. And there is nothing like that on the left. Obviously, we don't have the financial infrastructure for that. But we're not even trying. I mean, we're not. And that's what's so disappointing. Obviously, we couldn't do that to the same degree, but we could be doing something more. And honestly, that kind of falls on, you know, people like me out there. We should be doing this and we're not. And that's, you know, sad for us.
And the one thing I will say about Charlie Kirk and Turning Point is that people will pay to go. They raise massive sums of money that they turn directly around into producing ads that amplify that message and amplify that reality and show photos of people who were there and make them feel deeply connected to what's going on. And like they have an ownership stake in this MAGA movement. And it reminds me so much of 1960, of Richard Nixon and Kennedy debating on television. And Nixon didn't like the idea. He thought it was below the dignity of the office to debate on TV. Kennedy loved it. He'd go wherever the audience was. And as we've seen the wisdom of that, I mean, Kennedy won. There is a virtue to going where your audience is. It doesn't mean you have to have the same crazy extreme message as a Charlie Kirk, but you do need to go out and connect people and give them a sense of ownership and a sense of engagement with the Democratic Party. And I really feel that's where the breakdown is.
It really is. And, you know, it almost is like going to a live concert because, you know, you've seen the musicians, you see them on TV, you've read interviews with these people, but to see them face to face, even if you're up in the nosebleed section, to see that person in person, that changes something. It truly does. It makes them feel more human. And even when you're talking about somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene or Matt Gaetz, people still enjoy seeing them in person. It makes them feel real, which creates this, you know, connection that they seem to have between them. Even if the connection's not real, they perceive it to be there, and it creates this loyalty. And we got nothing. I mean, we got Netroots, you know, Netroots Nation. I will say that, but it's still, I honestly, I didn't even realize that it happened this year. And I'm in this, and I've been to Netroots plenty of times. I didn't even realize they were having one this year. And I follow them on Twitter and didn't see a dang thing from them. And that's really disappointing, because like the one thing we have, we're not even out there pushing it properly. So I don't know.
Yeah, a big part of this is that during the Obama years, Democrats got very sold on the idea that digital and micro-targeting and online advertising was the future, that we could get all these returns without having to build all the infrastructure. And it seemed like a great deal at the time, until, you know, we saw the resurgence of CPAC, we saw Turning Point, and saw that voters actually quite enjoy being able to go out and press the flesh with Ted Cruz, to see Josh Hawley play the classics and raise his fist and take pictures. There's nothing that is a substitute for that level of energy. And that's something that Democrats just have not built the infrastructure for.
And I mean, you know, some of these people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I know, was one of them. There was a line about 100 yards long, yeah, not even exaggerating, of people waiting to go and shake her hand. That's a connection, again, the Democratic Party has to start making with people. But it takes money. I mean, that's a big holdup. We don't get the same kind of money that somebody like Charlie Kirk or Ben Shapiro can make. And that puts us at a disadvantage. And you don't, yep, want it to be a DNC-sponsored event. You know, you're going to turn off some people, and you probably have some campaign finance issues with that too. But we got to come up with some better ideas, because God knows the Democratic Party itself needs as much help as possible. They shouldn't, but they clearly do. And, you know, that's where some kind of alliance on the left, which is like herding cats, but some kind of alliance to get this thing going, I think could really make a big impact.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it helps the Republicans that the richest people in the world seem to be funneling money into the Republican, yeah, Party. And it makes you wonder why. And also that a lot of rank and file MAGA voters are willing to pay their life savings to, I don't know, stop the lizard people or whatever Donald Trump is saying. But there is an opportunity. Democrats like to get excited too. There are plenty of Democratic politicians people are fired up about. I mean, we can start small and build this up. And I guarantee if we produce it and put it forward, there will be an audience for it.
Absolutely. Max Burns, Third Degree Strategies. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at TheMaxBurns or at The Daily Beast or NBC News.
Max Burns, thank you so much for joining us here on Ring of Fire.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire program. But if you want the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.